You may have heard, I may have mentioned it before, when Krishnamurti was asked, he was already quite old, he had been speaking for 50 years continuously to people, groups. And one day, after 50 years of speaking, he said, "Do you want to know what my secret is?" And suddenly everybody became alert. They'd already gone to sleep because they'd listened to him so many times. And of course, that's what people had been waiting for 50 years. What's his secret? Because if he tells us his secret, then we'll know. "So my secret is," he said, "I don't mind what happens." Many people scratch their heads. But you don't need to scratch your head, because you know what that means now. "I don't mind what happens." Not dependent on the objects that arise, what comes and goes, what happens in the now, because he knows something that's deeper than what happens, the field in which it happens. "I don't mind," how wonderful to go through life and say, "I don't mind what happens." He didn't say, "I don't care what happens." There's a difference in the English language. "I don't care" has hidden resentment and hidden resistance to it. And some people mistake that for the state of surrender. And they say, "Oh, I just don't care anymore." They do care. There's resistance hidden, and you can sense it when they say it. "I don't care anymore. Oh, I've had enough. I just don't care anymore." And there's still a contraction in that. "I don't mind" is an openness. It's fine. And there's still great care. Whatever happens is acknowledged, and the care flows into what you do, action that arises. "But I don't mind. It's fine. It's still the now. The same now. It's always the same now. It's always fresh, new, totally." So that is self-realization, God-realization, doesn't matter what you call it. Self-realization does not mean that you have an improved idea in your head of who you are. So you no longer relate to yourself as an object in consciousness. So this is the state of presence, as the unconditioned awareness is there, you are present in the now. Your attention is here. Alert attention. Every cell of the body is part of that state of attention as you sit here. The awareness is a whole body phenomenon. It happens, affects your entire energy field. Every cell is present. Or Jung could say, you are present with every cell of the body, alive, alert, awareness. The essence of the body is also awareness or consciousness. Temporarily it appears as a physical form, but the essence of all forms is consciousness. So it's good to feel your body, to feel the aliveness, that is within the body. Because then you go beyond the physical form without denying the physical form. Traditionally, in spirituality, people have attempted to go, they've somehow known that I am more than this physical vehicle, and then they denied it. I must get away from this. But it didn't work. So without needing to deny that, you can honor also the physical form, but take your attention deeper into the form, not away from the form. Take your attention into the form and sense that which animates the form. And you sense it first as an aliveness. And then at first it still you feel it as if you were conscious of that aliveness, and then you merge with it. You are that aliveness, that alive presence. And once you have found being, and one cannot really say that you found it, you can only find it now, be it now. It's not an achievement that says, okay, I've accomplished it now, I am certified enlightened. You can only be it now. What once you are it consciously, what you already always were, always will be, it doesn't matter where you are anymore. The same nectar of being is here in the magic of this place as it would be in downtown, wherever. But here too, as I mentioned before, if you live in connectedness with that, it will be reflected even in the external forms of your life. They are more harmonious. After a while, you notice they're becoming more harmonious. So it's not a turning away from this world. Say, I'm no longer interested in any objects that arise. This also has been done in spirituality, in some traditions. You're not even allowed to look at beauty anymore because it's unreal, they say. Don't get into anything. Some Buddhist traditions do that. So all it looks okay. Not interested in anything in the world of form. I can see what's behind it. It's a good. They've seen something, but it may not be quite the right way. At least it's not what I would like, to deny the forms. No. It's to acknowledge the beauty, the essence that expresses itself as beauty and as incredible aliveness in the multiple forms of the world, nature, and the many humans that exist. Not denying it. And so those forms around you also then become more harmonious because your inner state, when you live in connectedness with being, is a state of incredible, vitally alive peace. And then after a while, the external structures of your life reflect also that peace. Never totally, because everything in the external world lives within polarities. The whole external universe is there, can only exist with it as tension between the two polarities. Good, bad, high, low. Black, white. This is the tension between polarities that upholds the entire universe. So that will be there. So to some extent, you cannot remove the tension between polarities totally because the whole universe would collapse. But the tension between polarities becomes a much more benevolent and benign spectacle for you when you live in the state of connectedness with being. And if that happens to enough humans, that's the transformation of the world. Because the world that humans create is a reflection of their inner state of consciousness or unconsciousness. That's the world humans create. And so the transformation of the world is very much a secondary thing. It is can only be a reflection of the inner transformation of consciousness. And it will be. That's how the world changes. But don't put the cart before the horse and say, I need to change the world. Then, because the next question I will then ask is, do you know who you are? No, I need to change the world first. The end of compulsive thinking is another little bonus that comes with that. And you don't disappear when your mind stops. So when you, I recommend that in between sessions, each one of you spends a little bit of time also alone with nature and go somewhere, stand somewhere, sit somewhere, or walk slowly, and just focus on certain forms, whether they be flowers or one flower or some flowers, trees, a tree, a patch of ground, or a grove of trees, and watch their movement, sense the stillness around each form, the stillness within each form, see how unproblematic its existence is, see how every form of nature is aligned completely with now and is an expression of the totality, an unproblematic expression of the One. Doesn't last long, but it's a beautiful, unproblematic expression of the One Consciousness. And as you watch the beautiful form, and as you become aware of a stillness around the forms and within, that stillness is suddenly also in you as you continue to watch. And that means there are the two levels present now. The object, which is not denied, it's beautiful. The object that arises in your awareness, the flower, the tree, and the deeper dimension of the awareness itself. You sense that as yourself. And then you can, for a moment, close your eyes so the object disappears, and what's left, it's the incredible aliveness, but stillness. And then you watch, you look again, that is again. And then you close your eyes. There's that field of stillness that contains all possible objects already, that in unmanifested form already, in unmanifested non-form. The essence of all nature is already within you as your own essence. And whatever you see in the world of form and nature, one could call is the diluted essence, the nectar of being. Being, primordial being, before it becomes form, is the essence of who you are. The whole of sense-perceived forms, no matter how beautiful, is the skimmed milk, and you are the cream. that's beautiful. And that is, you're now perceiving the universe no longer from a state of separateness, which is when you're continuously trapped in mental noise, it becomes a veil of separateness. Every label that the mind throws up separates from you, you from reality, perceived reality. So without the labels, you know every other life form essentially as yourself, the essence. You know it as yourself. That's love. So you are in love. Love becomes not the sticky love of pop songs or whatever. Don't you ever leave me. Not true love becomes the essence. It's your normal state of consciousness is one of love. Which simply means knowing the other in its essence as yourself. Even human beings. Nature, of course, easy to love. Human beings, more challenging, but that's good. It's always a question of penetrating beyond the veil of mind that comes at you when another human being comes at you. And that means simply allowing the veil of mind to be there. It's there. It's a human condition up till now. Nothing personal in it. Every human being manifesting in one way or another, basically all the same, the veil of mind. Nothing personal in it. I don't demand that you should be enlightened by now. So as you perceive nature, be aware of the awareness also. Don't deny the form, you don't need to. Honor the form, but it won't last long anyway, no form does. Be aware of that which is deeper. One could say that is the I am presence, the I am, the one. You're aware of who is perceiving. You could say not I in the sense of my me and my story, a much deeper sense of I. The I that is God's self-definition in I am that I am, the one I am, beyond I am this or I am that, because I am this or I am that refers to objects in awareness. So when one utters the word I, on one level, it's a fiction. That's me and my story, the I that refers to the object of me that I've made out of my story in the head. And then on a deeper level, when the word I is the most profound word in the whole language, because it points to your one essential reality, the one. Why do we sit here? Does it get any better than this? Is it going to get any better than this? What could get better in this is it? How can the nectar of being be improved on? Let's listen to a song now that's called I Am. if you have it, Kim, it points to that, and it's a little meditation in itself by Kirtana.
Before the body, before the story, before the name, beyond the mind's attempt to find or explain. Before the breath, beyond the sense of pleasure or of pain.
I would come to an empty tent on a day like this. Some people are out there in the sun. They maybe just absorb the vibes that come out from the tent. That's enough. wonderful sound in the background. Usually to get that sound you have to buy a New Age CD. There's the sound and the underlying awareness. And that's like that sound is happening within a field of peace around it, so to speak. Representing the human mind. And of course, that's the momentum of the mind, except you have to multiply this by 100 or 500. And that's the addiction to thinking. Addiction means it has a momentum, and the momentum is there and it doesn't want to go. If that were not enough, on top of it, there's also the periodic addiction to suffering in humans. It's not there all the time. But when it starts, a cycle starts, there's also reluctance or refusal to let go. It simply means it has momentum. So we already know about thinking, the momentum of thought. Not trying to get rid of thought, although it does happen, when great alertness arises, and in some of you that is happening, thought subsides, replaced by awareness, which is true intelligence. And awareness transcends thought, which means thought can still operate even in the presence of awareness. Within awareness and with awareness, but only a small aspect of that vastness. So it's possible, and this is happening to quite a few people as this influx is coming in at an accelerated pace, that in amazement they realize no longer thinking it, just knowing it, there's no thought. And I haven't disappeared. That's a thought, of course. And it's possible that there may be a gap of no thought, and very quickly the thought comes, oh look, no, I'm not thinking. I did it. The momentum of thought is still there, even in those people in whom thoughtlessness, thoughtless awareness, which is the new state of consciousness, arises, and yet, even in those, thought still has momentum and it will reassert itself. And all you need to do is know that thought is there. Then you're not lost in thought, which is the universal human condition until now. lost in thought. That's how one teacher, when he was asked to describe the human condition, he said, lost in thought. So when thought is still there, the noise of the mind, just knowing there's mental noise, takes away some of its pretentiousness, because it pretends to be so important. And so you can identify noise as mental thought, recognize thought as mental noise. Then it's not that difficult anymore. Not a personal problem of mine, not as important as it pretends to be. Not true in many cases, simply a perspective on things. You can take one perspective on a on your life situation, somebody else's life, behaviors, an event. You can take many, many perspectives on the event and interpret it from one perspective. And I could always, and anybody could give you many other possible perspectives from which to interpret particular life situations, events, person's behavior. Many perspectives are possible. They are thought positions. I'm taking this perspective. And once you're identified with thought, you think your sense of self is aligned with one particular interpretation or perspective of seeing the world or interpreting my life. And so you're stuck, you're identified with thought. If you can recognize a thought stream as one perspective, not untrue and not absolutely true, relatively true, and then there is another perspective, and then there's another. Anybody could easily adopt the perspective that their life is a particularly miserable one, and you could find reasons why this is so. Anybody. And you can adopt other perspectives that are equally and equally relatively true. Those are all interpretations of the mind, interpretations of the world of form. And not to get stuck with one interpretation and have your sense of self invested in one particular thought stream, mental position, me. And then, of course, you believe you have the absolute truth in that mental position, and it's satisfying in some way, and addictive in some way, because it is addictive because it strengthens your sense of self, because this is the correct perspective, the one that's right. And then you can fight other perspectives. So to recognize thought activity as a small aspect of the truth, partially true, relatively true, whatever you can tell yourself about yourself and your life is a perspective. And some people particularly get stuck in particular perspectives on their own lives. And to recognize that, all that, as thought and not absolutely true, it is mind activity. It is a mental position. There's no mental position that can encompass everything. It's always partial. Whatever you say about another human being will be a partial truth. They may have committed a crime or a great crime. And whatever you say, even there, whatever you say, this person is a great criminal, is a partial truth. Many other things are also true. So to recognize the relativity of all thought, not to expect get some ultimate answer on some ultimate interpretation about anything derived from thought. So you can then more or less use thought and play with it. It's useful here and there, but not believe that deep-seated belief in mind activity. And then you see that a lot of thought that arises is self-serving. It obscures the aliveness of this moment. It's self-serving and it's addictive. One thought grows into another and into another and into another. And so the beautiful thing here is what's arising in humans now is a different dimension of consciousness from where they can witness thought. Witness means to watch, not to fight, not to make it into a problem, which is more thought, simply to witness, yes, mind, the activity of mind. It's all right. And you say yes to that, because your practice is to say yes to what is. And that's what is. There's mind activity. And you're not, then, you don't develop a little me in the head that fights some other imaginary little me in the head, and you're engaged in a struggle with yourself. Why am I not free of thought? It becomes a personal problem. And when you're in thought, everything is personalized. Every event, you have some personal reactive relationship to the event. A personalized reactive relationship to the event. And what is lacking then is spaciousness around it. Space. Then there's no inner space. Crammed full of, like living in a room full of stuff. Furniture and bits and pieces, and you can't move. You knock into one and then you knock into another. Where's the space? It's all occupied with thought. That means consciousness has taken on form of thought and is only found as thought in yourself. So here, what arises is space, which is inseparable from presence. Presence is space or spaciousness. That's why space is the what we call space externally can be very helpful. And also, that is something that the mind is not usually aware of, that the essence of this room, well, tent, is space. There is a space in which this event takes place. And in many sacred places, there's always some space, an important aspect of the sacredness of that place, whether you go into an ancient cathedral in Europe or temple or a mosque. There's always a space or spaciousness, and that is always the essence. And related to space is stillness, another, or silence, another externalization of the inner stillness. The inner is stillness, the externalization of that is silence, gaps. To become aware of space or to become aware of silence means immediately the mind subsides and there is spaciousness within yourself. Because only through that can you become aware of silence or space. So, for example, and this is another way of getting it, what I've been pointing to all morning, when you listen to the sound of the sea, sense perceptions, the sense perception is there. But there is a dimension present here that usually you wouldn't notice. Even though it is a continuous sound, there's also a stillness with it. But that is not something you would usually be aware of. Usually you would only be aware of the sound. But the sound happens within a field of stillness. And you can notice both at the same time. Ordinarily, you would only notice the sound. And in the ordinary state of consciousness, you would notice the phenomenon and react to the phenomenon and get trapped in the world of form. This is only one tiny example. So if you can listen to that, being aware not only of the arising sound, but also the underlying stillness, that is the awareness in which it happens. And that is the space around the phenomenon, the space around whatever arises. And that is always vaster, infinitely vaster than what arises, because the space is the awareness itself. And even the Pacific Ocean, which is about the vastest thing you can have on the planet, is nothing compared to the vastness in which that happens. It's like a drop in the vastness, ultimately, of who you are. And so it would be quite true to say that the whole Pacific Ocean happens in you. Don't try to work that out mentally. You would drown. So we're getting to that point of awareness. This is easy relatively to sit here, listen to that, and it happens to be a beautiful sound. Not everything that arises in this world would be called beautiful. Many things are beautiful. Then there are other weird things that happen, strange things. So let's begin with beautiful things. There's that. And there's that which is not manifested, because stillness is not manifested. It's not there. You can't say, there it is. It's unmanifested. And yet, it's there. And then as that deepens in you, that awareness, a point comes, and in some of you it's coming quickly, where the stillness in which it happens is you sense that more than what is happening. No matter what it is. There could be a volcano erupting this moment, and you would watch that, and maybe the lava is coming towards you at great speed. And you would sense that enormous stillness and peace within which it happens. There could be mad people around you screaming and gesticulating. And it's there, the noise. It's allowed. because that space, spaciousness is very allowing. It allows, just like this space allows anything. We could come in here with a heavy metal band and make a lot of noise. The space says, okay, go ahead. And then at some point it stops. Oh, nothing ever happened to the silence. It's still there. That's the one thing humans cannot pollute. That's good, otherwise they would do that. And that is something in you, because I'm not really talking about external. That is a dimension in you that cannot be polluted. That cannot be touched by anything that you do or by anything that is done to you by somebody else or the world. There is that dimension which is beyond pollution. And this is why it has happened that sometimes great people who committed dreadful crimes suddenly, through the suffering generated by their unconsciousness, the egoic self-image, the me, self-destructed, evaporated. The suffering became so intense that something within gave way. And that consciousness emerged, and they could see what they had done, but were no longer identified with it as a me. The continuity of unconsciousness was broken. And there arose, because that's all a person is, the continuity of unconsciousness. And there was a sudden discontinuity, and the new consciousness arose, and the state of stillness and peace. And they were suddenly, this is the original innocence suddenly revealed itself. Because there is such a thing as original sin, not perhaps in the sense that the church interprets those words, but in the sense that every human being inherits the madness of the human mind, the unconsciousness, and is forced to act it out, some in more extreme ways than others. But every human being is forced to act out the unconsciousness that he or she inherits. And if it's acted out in extreme ways, that leads to extreme suffering. And with extreme suffering comes the possibility for liberation, especially with extreme suffering, and especially in the absence of spiritual teaching, all you have is your teacher will be suffering. And then comes the possibility of collapse of the egoic mind structures, of being identified with a me, because the me becomes so dreadful to live with, and it's done such dreadful things that all it can do is self-destruct. That's the beauty, that the self-destruct mechanism is actually built into the egoic madness, and eventually, even if there were no spiritual teachings, it would self-destruct, and perhaps half the world to destroy with it, or if not the entire world. Here too, the destruction happens of ego, but it's very gentle. Nothing is killed, it's simply transformed, transmuted, dissolves. The energy that was trapped there becomes consciousness. So there's the original innocence in everyone, that which has not been touched by time, by the past, and whatever happened in the past. And some people need to move into dreadful unconsciousness to know that, and not may not happen at all in this lifetime. But the possibility is there whenever great suffering arises, and the good thing is that you don't need the great suffering anymore. Because it's already, you've already had, in many cases, suffering has brought you here, so it's been wonderful. Without suffering, you would be watching TV now. Or whatever. Or having a cocktail. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but that would be the limit of your achievements. So there's original sin, and we've all experienced that, and there's nothing personal in that. And the original innocence that reveals itself. And that is just as innocent as the space in this room is innocent and always untouched. And that is your true identity, your true nature is that. I like that expression, your true nature. I believe it comes from India. Your true nature reveals itself. And that's why it doesn't matter, your past is irrelevant here. The only relevance the past has, it has taken you here. In some way, in its own mad way, because everybody's past is mad, mine is. In its own mad way, the past and the madness of it worked. So even though we call the usual state of consciousness and the world which is a reflection of it, we call it mad, well, I call it mad, that almost looks as if I condemned it as undesirable. Within the totality, even that is fine. Even human madness within the totality has its place. And you can see that when you see that your own madness and your own self-induced suffering brought you here. And here doesn't necessarily mean it brought you to this point where consciousness arises, unconditioned.